Welcome, everybody, to this episode of O365A. And on today's show, we're joined by co-founder of Enable UC, Kevin Keeler. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So in the last month, we had a couple of key unified communication events. One was Comms VNext, which just wrapped up. The other one was about 4 weeks ago, a very popular unified communications event called Enterprise Connect. A common theme in both of those events, of course, was AI and how AI plays in communication. So we just wanted to have a bit of a roundtable and discuss the role that AI is playing in communications and where this is headed. So, Kevin, why don't you share some thoughts from both of those shows in terms of AI and what you saw?
Yeah, no, thanks, Curtis. I mean, first off, I don't have a nice shirt with a maple leaf, right? So I feel a little bit left out, but there you go. So Enterprise Connect, yeah, as you said, it was pretty much a month ago, just right at the end of April in Orlando, where it always is. And, you know, the interesting thing about Enterprise Connect is it's supposedly like the largest kind of, you know, unified communications show. But it includes all the vendors, right? So you get, you know, all of the vendor perspective, and then we'll talk about Comms VNext, which was last week, which is very, you know, laser focused on the Microsoft ecosystem. So it was fascinating attending both of those. But at both of those shows, artificial intelligence, and more specifically, you know, generative AI, which is using these large language models to help you, you know, do things like summarize meetings or help you write emails or summarize, you know, summarize emails or summarize long chat threads. That was a huge theme. It almost like overrode everything else, right? It felt like if you were a vendor and you didn't have an AI story, then I don't know, you just had to go home, right? So everybody was talking about it. But, you know, from my perspective, it's very exciting, but it's also very new. And I think a lot of people are really confused, right? So at Enterprise Connect, I delivered a session talking about Teams and Copilot. And of course, there's lots of Copilot, so that's a little confusing in the Microsoft ecosystem. And then I also delivered a session that looked at not only Microsoft, but also, you know, kind of what Zoom's doing with the AI Companion and WebEx with their AI Assistant and Google with Gemini. So that was fascinating just to kind of get the broader perspective. But what I would say is it's really easy to be confused because this is changing quickly. And even when you talk to the vendors, you know, just because you work for Microsoft, it doesn't mean you all of a sudden are an expert on all things Microsoft. So there was a lot of, I would say, unintentional misinformation. And I think, you know, going forward, that's something that is going to emerge as a theme as people try to use some of these generative AI tools, is if you don't understand how it works, there's a potential opportunity that it's going to, you know, might bite you in different ways. But there's kind of the high level, and then we can drill down into specific topics.
Well, that's really interesting. And having been to both of those shows, 3 years ago? Well, definitely before COVID, right. AI probably wouldn't have even been mentioned in that context, right? So that's pretty huge.
Yeah, absolutely. The shift was like, I thought at the, like last year at Enterprise Connect, we did a comparison session, and kind of the wrap up was, hey, AI is going to likely be in 2024 how people try to differentiate. They're going to, you know, all the marketing is going to say my AI is better than your AI. That was our prediction in 2023. And it turned out to be more even of a focus than we could have imagined.
Wow. Abib, you wanted to ask a question?
Yeah, so Kevin, like with these UC or I guess IC vendors, whatever you want to call them now, where do you see most of their like AI happening? Is it in their platform or their service, or the ones that actually have the hardware side of things? Are they putting it into the hardware as well to sort of capture like the bases and audio and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that really goes to the heart of some of the confusion, right? Because, you know, all of the platforms, like we're using, you know, Teams now to record this, and, you know, it's always included AI to, I think, Habib, that is not the real room that you are sitting in. So to replace the background, you know, Dino's got a blurred background. You know, voice isolation, all this noise cancellation, auto framing. So there's always been a lot of AI. And if we turn on transcription or translation, you know, all of that was powered by AI kind of behind the scenes, right? But, you know, what's happening now is it's, you know, I think the excitement is around this generative AI, this idea that, hey, Copilot, could you write me an email about whatever? Or I didn't have time to summarize, you know, to attend the meeting, so could you please summarize the meeting for me? Or this document is 100 pages, so summarize it in a paragraph or something like that, right? Now, in terms of the room vendors, the hardware vendors, I think they're absolutely putting AI on the edge, right? So I think what you're going to see over time, and people don't, I think they're debating this, but, you know, the right place for having AI processing is both, of course, on the edge and in the cloud. Because on the edge, you know, there's not latency. For biometrics, you know, for things, there's more security when you don't transmit that information to the cloud. But of course, in the cloud, you can do different things of, you know, than you can do on the edge. So these large language models, for the most part, are going to exist in the cloud just because they need kind of the processing power of the cloud, right? So I think people seem to be debating this, whereas, you know, the right answer is you put AI in both places for different use cases.
Just as I think that through that, the immediate thing that comes to mind is data governance. So one of the concerns, of course, with Gen AI is what data are you sending to these large language models? What's the perimeter of your data? Where is it leaving? Where is it going? Communications by nature tends to be sensitive. Was there much talk on sort of in both of those events around data governance with AI and communication data?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Microsoft is, for example, doing a good job. Like, they released a ton of user adoption materials. And I think that, you know, and just like planning materials around this. And certainly, you know, data governance is certainly something that they emphasize. I think, you know, when we talked about all the vendors, we talked about in that session, it was Brent Kelly, who's another analyst, and myself who delivered it. So that's why it's the we. We talked about, you know, understanding, depending on which models you're using, you know, where your data is going and making sure that you're comfortable with that. I mean, obviously, with Microsoft, for the most part, it stays inside your Azure tenant, where if you're a Microsoft shop, you've already stored a lot of your intellectual property. So hopefully you're already, you know, happy with Microsoft and trust Microsoft. With different vendors, yeah, they might be sending some of your data through APIs to OpenAI or Anthropic or different models, right? So certainly there was discussion around that, but I think that there's also confusion around that because some of the vendors say, well, we're going to use the best model for the use case, and that implies that maybe they're going to change what's happening, and it's unclear, you know, exactly if you're going to be informed now that they're using a different model for a particular use case, right? Now, the thing that I want to point out too is, you know, there's this whole kind of shadow AI. Like, if you don't give your users some type of AI tool or put in place some type of AI policy or block these things, you know, certainly a user could take a document, like, let's say, I don't know, you're doing a merger and acquisition, and it's supposed to be private. But if they don't have an AI tool and they want to summarize the document, there's nothing to prevent them from not understanding and pasting into ChatGPT and say, please summarize this draft contract or what have you, right? So I think, you know, not having any AI tools that are corporately sponsored, you know, runs the risk of shadow AI if users are finding that this is really helping make their job faster or better.
Makes sense. Yep.
Yeah, and Kevin, you were mentioning there's confusion. So there's like, you know, what is the AI doing? You said video, audio, maybe it's doing things generative in the actual meeting. Where is it happening? Is it on the client? Is it in the cloud? Right. But even or even what models are being used. But I think there's, yeah, leading into, you know, the audience that's benefiting from the AI, right? So if we look at something like Copilot, we joined this meeting today. There was a note that says, hey, Copilot is in this meeting, but this meeting's hosted in one of our tenants. So then, you know, the people that are outside the tenant don't have access to that. So were you seeing a confusion around like, you know, hey, we have these AI tools, but maybe the audience is scoped down or how is that looking?
Yeah, I think the different vendors handle that differently. And, you know, and quite frankly, I think everybody knows that, like, you know, Microsoft, because of their security platform, having guests have access to capabilities is, I would say, harder than, let's say, with a Zoom platform or a WebEx platform. And so certainly, like, I have Copilot. You have Copilot. This meeting isn't in my tenant. So if I click Copilot, it says, hey, it's only available for the hosting tenant. I think people haven't yet figured that out because they haven't tried all the different scenarios, right? And so I think this is, you know, this is new. And, you know, the Copilot's been around the longest as Copilot for GitHub. It's been around since 2021. It helps developers code better. There's lots of quantitative data in terms of, you know, who it helps make more effective and all kinds of things. All the other AI assistants and all the other co-pilots, they're sufficiently new that any feedback, even what like Nicole Herskowitz in the Enterprise Connect keynote, you know, the feedback she was sharing was more qualitative. It was more, hey, we asked these early adopters what they thought of it. Did they believe it made them more effective? Did they want to give Copilot back? And those were all positive. People thought it was making them more productive, but it wasn't hard data, right? And so I think the hard data over the balance of 2024, I think we'll see that evolve. And I think as part of that, end users are going to figure out, you know, like people like to demo this, like rewrite an email for me. It's a fun thing to demo. You can say, make it sound like a pirate or write this email like a poem. It demos really well, but it's less clear that in the day-to-day business, you want to be paying for that for people to kind of do that. Whereas I think the meeting summary or the document summary, if people continue to use those and if they find that has value, I think by the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of data to say, hey, for these types of use cases, it does make sense to pay the $30 per user per month, you know, that Copilot for M365 demands.
Nice. Kevin, we were kind of talking off camera about the areas of confusion and, you know, some of the key themes around Enterprise Connect. And you'd mentioned about this fact that people think the learning models are based on prompting and the interactions, and maybe spend a minute talking a little bit about that. And
yeah, I found, you know, especially with Microsoft, right? Because Microsoft has some great tools if you're a data scientist and you want to build your own AI model, right? So if you want to, I think they used like Frito-Lay's created a model that identifies, I don't know, Cheetos that are out of spec on the manufacturing conveyor belt. Like, that's great because Microsoft has all those tools to build your own AI model. Then you have these pre-built large language models, right? So this is, you know, GPT-4 and the different flavors of that and the Anthropic model, et cetera. Those models are pre-built because it takes huge amounts of compute to train them. And they're not built based on your data. They're not rebuilt based on your data. I mean, even, you know, people from the vendors would say, well, the more emails I write using this AI assistant, whether it's Copilot or a different one, oh, it learns how I write emails and it does a better job. And the truth of the matter is, those large language models, they are not learning, right? There's this concept of grounding where it, which is right now is unique, or at least a month ago was unique to Copilot, which is when you're especially in the Copilot that surfaces inside a, the Teams, so the Copilot chat in Teams, that AI assistant actually looks at your emails and your, you know, your previous meeting transcripts and your, you know, chats. And so it is using, now the model's not learning, but it's using that information as grounding, meaning it's feeding in some additional information. But for meeting summaries right now, it really is only looking at the transcript. So if you ask a question, even if it's a simple question that could be answered on the web, in the meeting, you know, the meeting Copilot right now, it is only looking at that speech to text transcript. So to get the right answer, you know, two things have to work. The speech to text has to work well, which of course depends on the devices you're using. It's harder in a room where there's multiple people, or if there's loud background noise, it might get certain things wrong in the transcript. And whatever's wrong in the transcript, then when you ask Copilot a question, if it misheard somebody's name, if it heard, you know, Tristan became Kristen, then all of a sudden the action items are, you know, you say, who's responsible for this? And it's going to give you the wrong name, right? So I think, you know, the fact that people thought, and they would say, they'd say, oh, I feel like Copilot's doing a better job because it's learning how I like to write emails. I think that's the human, you know, desire to kind of believe it's getting better. Now, maybe you're getting better at writing the prompts, so you're learning, but the large language models are not learning based on, you know, the data. And I think it'll take a while for people to understand kind of how that works and, you know, where it works well.
Yeah, and Kevin, just to add to that, I think, I mean, the greater Copilot experience can use different techniques. Like one of them is retrieval augmentative generation, where it right. uses the graph to get data and then augment those responses.
Yeah,
so absolutely. A large language model doesn't necessarily need to be trained on it, but it's able to know you and know some greater context. To your point, though, I think with the meeting experience, it's just the transcript. It doesn't reach out to graph, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, Microsoft and all the vendors, you know, realized that, hey, it would be good. Like, in Microsoft's announced that it's going to look at the transcript and then look at the meeting chat, because in a lot of meetings, you know, people will answer questions that come up in the chat. So that's a great source of information. The best place right now, and I would say really the only, kind of the really only real AI assistant, is in that Copilot that's surfaced in Teams, because it's looking at, you know, kind of what you'd expect an assistant to do, which is to look at a whole bunch of different information, right? So, you know, I think a prompt that says, help me prepare for this meeting with such and such, works really well when you ask it in the right Copilot window, so specifically in that Teams one, because it will look at, you know, previous emails and chats and, you know, maybe in documents that appear to be relevant, right? So, I mean, this is changing so quickly. You know, it's almost week over week, there's new kind of features and functionality. I think that that's both exciting, but I think it's also challenging for users, right? And one of the things that at Comms V Next, Karuna did a session, and she was talking about, and this I found very interesting, because typically with a pilot, like if you're doing a Teams phone pilot, you know, my advice is, okay, well, don't do it all in the IT group, you know, try different, you know, departments, like give it to a few admin assistants, give it to a few salespeople, give it to a few IT people, et cetera. And what, you know, Karuna was talking about was, you know, doing it in a cohort, because with AI, it's like if we're all doing a similar job role, we're going to learn prompts that work well in our job role. And they've kind of learned through the early adopter program that kind of sharing of, hey, this is how I summarize these types of meetings, you know, because we're all in the sales department, that becomes really powerful. And every week I am amazed by a prompt that somebody, you know, says, hey, this is how I use Copilot to do something in a way that is creative and I hadn't thought of, right? Whether it's to format data or to take, I don't know, meeting results and put it in a table of a particular format. And, you know, I think that that's an exciting thing, but that's, you know, this is early days, right? So I think we're going to all learn collectively. And, you know, over the next 6 to 12 months, we'll have a much better idea of where this really works well and where, you know, there is a chance for a productivity decline, right? Because if you do certain things, like I've tried to create certain images, and, you know, the weird finger things or whatever. So, you know, the productivity decline is you go and you try it because it's interesting, but then it doesn't work and you try it and, you know, 15, 20 minutes goes by and then you say, oh man, I'm going to just go to some stock photos because I never could get what I wanted, right? So in that case, you've actually, you know, wasted 20 minutes, right? And, you know, so similar to if you summarize a document and if somehow there was something in the document that was important to note that didn't appear in the summary, that could be a risk, you know, and if you get kind of bitten by that, then you're going to have to kind of do the summary, but then it's almost like you're going to have to go read the document because you don't really trust it, in which case it's unclear that that's improving the productivity. So I think we're going to learn, you know, through some trial and error, what use cases are, you know, incredibly valuable. But we have to get users to try it, and we have to kind of gather the feedback and try to track it to, you know, to see where the real value lies.
Just curious, in addition to those two conferences, your work with Enable UC, do you see many people lighting up Copilot right across the board, not just in Teams, but Microsoft 365? Are people still generally in the evaluation mode right now, or are people slowly adopting?
Yeah, I think at least what I see and what I, you know, think is a reasonable is to be in that evaluation mode. I mean, I think Microsoft highlights some companies that have bought, you know, kind of 10,000 licenses of Copilot, but you know, for the most part, those are, you know, organizations that have a lot more than 10,000 people, right? So you know, that might represent 10% or 5% of their employee population. I think that that's what we're seeing, and that's what you know, I think it's great that as of early January that you know, you don't have to commit to the 300. So now you can get, you know, one, although people are, you know, rightly saying it's still an annual commit, right? So if you're a smaller organization, you know, it's still the $360 per year because you've got to commit to the annual license, at least for Copilot for Microsoft 365, right? But yeah, so it's still, I think, experimental days. And I think that that's where people should be.
Very good. Well, we'll wrap it up. One last question, just to wrap it up. On the AI front, what was the most exciting thing you saw at either show in terms of either capabilities or just pure wow factor in terms of AI and communications?
Yeah, I think the thing that was most interesting to me is back to just the creativity that people are using this. So I spoke to a lady at Enterprise Connect. She has a wide span of control and, you know, hundreds of people kind of under her. And she knows as part of her team that some of the people are confrontational. And so she can't attend every meeting. So one of the things that she said she does is they record and create transcripts for all the meeting. So she'll go into a meeting and says, was there any conflict in this meeting? And if the answer is no, then she just kind of moves on and just says, okay, that's fine. If the answer is yes, then she'll say, you know, Copilot, can you create a table of the different, you know, the different points of view and, you know, kind of the pros and cons. And I thought that that was a brilliant way to triage if you have lots of meetings. So I think, you know, the human creativity in terms of how we use these tools, that's I think what I was most excited about.
That's a fantastic example. That just spawned a bunch of ideas for me in terms of like customer calls and who's the most angry customer.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and how do you, yeah. What are these questions? And I think it's amazing sometimes the responses you get and quite insightful.
Good stuff. All right. Well, I know you're a busy guy, Kevin, and we really appreciate you coming on, sharing your insights and experiences from those two events. And we'll see you on the road sometime.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And I'm sure this topic is going to be one that fills many podcasts for the balance of 2024.
Definitely. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.